Corbin, you listened last week?
No, I did. Actually.
Was that bullshit?
No, I did. It truly did.
Hey, guys, before Kyle shows up, can we talk about what a shitty guest he's going to be?
I'm not looking forward to it.
What's up, buddy?
Shit! He's here? Why don't you guys tell me?
There's a funny story of, like, the first time I met you. So you acted like a total neckbeard when you came in, like, hey, what's up, Kyle? It was, like, the weirdest thing, right?
He is a neckbeard.
Hold on. So literally, like, I want to say, like, 30 minutes prior, a guy came up and was exactly like you were acting. And, like, I had to treat it super serious, and you're like, oh, hey, I'm actually Jason Ault. I was like, oh, sorry, dude. Like, the way that you approached me was, like, so weird.
I met people that were unironically acting like that.
Yeah, exactly. Literally 30 minutes before that. What's up? I'm like some guy I'd never known. It was the weirdest thing, so. I'm sorry I took you seriously at that moment.
No, it was so funny. I'm like, I'm looking for Marsh Slash. How many Marsh Slash do you have?
Yeah.
Sure, I'll be with you in a second to give you customer service.
Oh, it was funny.
That's going on the cast.
That is the cast. The cast has started.
It's
Jason's
done.
An asshole. That's all you need to know to
you
get
started.
You
can't top that.
Just trying to screw with somebody and it got like, my joke got messed up by reality.
Yeah.
There's, what's the law? Something about parody and you can't tell the difference.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's
Jason, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know. I can't think of the name of the law because I've got too many of those stupid laws memorized. There's no parody of extremism that can't be confused by actual.
You can't differentiate with the extremism. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyways, so we have a guest this week. Marcel.
That's all you're going to say on that topic.
Marcel, do that thing where you introduce our guests and I introduce guests really well, boys.
We haven't even introduced the podcast yet, boys. We're getting ahead of ourselves here, aren't we?
Are we even starting? Are we really starting?
Do people know who we are?
Yeah, you know what, Marcel, you do this stuff all the time.
That story was a legit good start to the podcast.
Oh, sure. Wow. But what podcast would that be, Corbin?
Money
Grab. This is Brainstorm Brewery, the best podcast of all podcasts. We are the number one. No, we're not.
We're the number one finance podcast.
Can we do pick of the week? I have a really good one.
No, Ryan, this is the week we're not going to do it because you want to.
No, I mean like right now. Can we just?
No.
I mean, we're doing everything backwards. We haven't even introduced the cast.
All right. Hold up. We're going to corral everybody. Get on the train.
Corral Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan is, he's going wild. I don't know what happened.
He needs to get corralled. He needs to hold his horses.
So we have a guest here.
Horses are out
here.
The corral.
Hold up, were you trying
to introduce it?
Yeah, we're going to introduce a guest. He's out there in the corral too. The Golden Corral, where all the buffet items are.
Oh no.
The worst, but they're not that bad.
Jason has a good story about that place.
Ooh.
That's the worst.
So we got a guest here. He's from the store known, he's the owner, CEO of Aether Games. We got Kyle Lopez.
What's up, guys?
What's up?
So your Twitter name is your boy Lopez, but it's L-O-P-E instead of the Z. You didn't fit the Z in there?
Yeah, basically, that's like my nickname growing up. My dad was named Lope when he was like younger, and it kind of just, you know, fit me too. So Lope is what I went by whenever I was a kid.
Oh, okay. So
Lope is an actual verb.
What does it mean?
It's like car stuff, right? Like a cam lopes.
Sure.
No, lope.
Would it have something
like
to do with like eloping?
It's how Ryan moves, isn't it? No, it's like running with like a, it's the opposite of Ryan. It's running with a long stride.
Oh, yeah.
So like if I had my lost strands, man, I can run like, I ran like a giraffe. It was sweet. Like you just like throw them way out in front and you just swing between them and you just stride. All right, I lope. All I like right. That. That's a new word, vocabulary.
Everything I mean, that's what we're here for is to teach people new words. That I'm not familiar with Magic Finance.
Hey, that's my strong point. I come up with all kinds of new words.
It could have plenty of things to do with Magic Finance. I'm going to lope over to TCG Player and buy some cards.
Hey, wait.
We're going to talk about those cards I'm going to buy later.
Well,
specifically Aether Games, right?
That's what he meant, actually.
Yes,
yeah.
That was what I meant, that place.
Good job, Ryan.
So I was going to segue into things Marcel said. We didn't talk about that last week. Oh, man, that hashtag went off. I want to thank everyone for the amazing stuff. I'm sorry I didn't go through and pick out some some ones we'll do it next week, but they...
We'll pick out some right now. Kill the bird with two stones. That's a pretty good one.
That does sound exactly like something Marcel would say.
Targamoyf? That's like a personal favorite, because that happened.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, so speaking on Targamoyf, I got a question for you guys right here. So I got my Targamoyf from Modern Masters 2. I mean, the Modern Masters from Vegas. And do you think it's going to get reprinted in Modern Masters 2? And should I sell it now while it's like 200?
Yes. Yeah, Targamoyf's coming back.
And do you think there's going to be...
Can you imagine if they didn't put it in there?
But do you think there'll be a premium to it being from just Modern Masters that... Because it's so limited, but...
Not enough of one, I can't imagine.
It's probably going to be the same art.
I don't imagine them using a different art than they did before.
That's kind of like saying there was less M10 than there was M12, so there's a premium on, like, an M10 Dragon Skull Summit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's true.
When I put them all in, they're all $2.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. If it doesn't get reprinted somehow, then it probably goes to $300, but... If it does get reprinted, it probably goes to $100. Is that fair to say? Like,
I feel like you want to be in the future side, Goyfs. I feel like that's the safe one. Like, I don't see that one taking a hit hardly at all.
Yeah, I mean, because if it's gonna be reprinted, it's gonna be the Modern Masters art reprinted. Same with Dark Confidant.
It is print run.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we obviously know it's gonna be larger than Modern Masters 1, but it really is hard to say
has that been confirmed?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not been confirmed how much larger, but it has been confirmed that it is larger.
So are we looking at, like, Commander 2014 versus Commander 2013, or Commander 3013 versus original Commander?
I would say the latter. Really there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it's hard because if it's not, like, say they're 200 right now and you sell yours and you get, you know, 175 or something out of it, if it's reprinted and goes to 100, 125, that's great for you, but if it's not reprinted and you have to reacquire like 250, like, I don't know. I think maybe the safer advice, like you said, is unless you're just real attached to the Modern Masters art, is to turn them into future site Goyfs, at least for the time being, right? It's a safer place so you can still play with your Goyfs.
That's where I would be, yeah. Or even better, future site foil ones, because those just seem impenetrable to any kind of like financial bumps.
Well, that sounds.
Why not just tell them to run out
of our listeners?
Russian foil while you're at it.
I mean, yeah, that's
500 a piece right now, but I can see them hitting $5,000 at the end of the month. That's.
I mean, that card is nowhere to go but up. Like even at $700, I mean, yeah, you can get one for a set, but. You want to make money, right?
Right. Well, there you go, Marcel. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. That's well done. Thank you.
An actual question. He just wanted to segue away from us making fun of him.
No, it was an actual question because I remember last time that I asked Ryan, he's like, you know, you should just sit on it till you, I mean, do you need the money? And if not, then just sit on it till, you know, it's going to appreciate, but it looks like it's going to get reprinted. So it's a good time for me to get out. I'm sad because it has a stamp on there. So, I don't know how much that affects the price.
Oh,
I mean, if we're talking about Modern Masters 2, like, the cards I would stay away from would be, like, Goyf, Mox Opal, all the Praetors, the
Filter
Lands.
Oh, so you think the Praetors will be in there, too?
The Filter Lands.
Karn.
Karn, yeah.
Zendikar Fetch Lands.
No, I don't think they're coming back. I think they're going to – I honestly believe – Zendikar Fetchlands aren't coming back until Return to Zendikar, which they've been telegraphing for, what, like 2 years now? Like,
yeah.
If Return to Zendikar is not the next big set after Dragons, like, I'll eat a stack of cards.
Wow.
It's going to be – he's absolutely correct. Zendikar and then Innistrad.
Oh, would be Eldrazi in this block, Ryan. I like how you just – like,
I still think we have a chance, but these two storylines are definitely crossing.
I do. I mean, it is pretty clear. There's this big push towards colorless in this set, like Ghostfire Blade, stuff like that. I mean, it clearly does line up really well with Eldrazi. I could see that. It'd just be so.
You got to think though. I guess this block will work with the one in the fall. I was thinking that Origins is coming out too. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was thinking. All right. I mean, I guess it would be kind of about that time, right? So it's Return to Ravnica. And then we had two new sets in two new blocks. It could be time. I mean, they went Scars of Mirrodin, Innistrad, Return to Ravnica, right? There was only one block in between there, so two blocks and then a return to Zendikar could make sense. That would certainly put more out there than your Zendikar fetches, but either way, like, you don't want to get into them right now, do you?
Honestly, I really don't think they're going to waste. They're going to do what they did with Onslaught fetches. They're going to make it like, look how much they sold of Khans, because fetches were there. I mean, Khans is a great set overall, but I mean, like, that bump, if you look at sales, like, from Khans versus, like, the newest set, Fate Reforged, like, Khans still is killing it because of Fetchlands. Everybody wants Fetchlands, and they're not going to waste.
Fetches.
Well, hold on. Well, it's a much lower, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is, they're going to use that as like a home run. And they have so many home runs already in Modern Masters 2 that I don't see them wasting the Zendikar fetches on it. They're going to have so much good stuff that they just don't have to.
I mean, that's a good point. And it keeps it from, like, if they were in Modern Masters 2, it may not affect the price, obviously. Like, every time they've done these really targeted reprints for Modern, they've killed them, you know, like Shocklands. We're going to put them in every set, even the one that doesn't have Shocklands in them. Fetchlands. We're going to put them in this set that doesn't even have Fetchlands.
Exactly.
Define kill it. They haven't, though, Corbin. Look at the price of Shocks. They're not
that
bad.
It doesn't have anything to do with the price. It has to do with how much Wizards can reasonably print.
And when you put
them in the set at rare and then put them in another set in a special slot, that's about all Wizards can do to reprint the card.
Yeah, and you're going to drive the price down, but, like, look at fetches aren't that low.
It doesn't have anything to do with the price. They're still going to be
$20 to $30 cards in a couple of years.
Yeah, of course, but it has nothing to do with the price. It has to do with from Wizards' point of view.
Yeah, but right now,
I understand. But from our point of view, it does have to do with the price. Like, that's how we directly look at that availability and, like, how many of them are needed. Like, if its price was really low, then it clearly means that, like, the supply has been completely filled.
Look at their late cycle last time in Modern Masters. They're like, they had Vivids.
We're getting the Cascade Bluff cycle. Yeah.
That's
what I think. That's what my money's on too. I mean,
there are as many rares as there are uncommons in Modern Masters 1. I kind of expected to be near parity this time around, so.
Okay, how about this? Even if we don't think Zendikar lands are going to be in Modern Masters 2, if we're pegging them for the set that comes out after that, either way, you still don't want to be in them, right?
Nope.
I'm
waiting to get mine for the cube. I have not got them because I don't want it. I know they're going to come. They're coming eventually. I think they're coming in Dragons of Tarkir.
I think the Zen fetches?
Yes. I think so.
I'll take some bets on that. I think now is not the best time to sell them because there's still some upside. I think once Modern Masters 2 comes out and they're not there and they're not in Dragons and they're not going to be in Origins, like, I just think that there's, you know, this is the hot season, like, you know, February through May. That's when the prices go up the most across the board. So I still think you have plenty of time to, like, sell them later and get a better return. But yeah,
Real question then. Do you buy them right now?
Well, I buy every Fetchland I see.
Well, all of us on this podcast do, so go on.
Yeah, but, I think, like, Misty collapsed in price pretty much. I don't think it's a bad move. I mean, I just see upside for, like I said, I just see upside for the next couple of months. So, it's like it's always bet on real estate, right? It's an easy thing to get into, and it's a good return, a good solid return.
And it goes out four at a time.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and while we're on the subject of Modern Masters 2, and you guys making fun of me about this whole Eldrazi thing, there are Eldrazi in Modern Masters 2, so I wasn't incorrect in saying that Eldrazi were getting reprinted.
You were saying in a major set. So we're.
I mean, that's a pretty major set.
Shut up!
I would be tempted to say that set, the most major of sets, as it will create the biggest Grand Prix.
Ryan, you should be ashamed of yourself.
You were
for
super right, Ryan.
Are you going? Are you signing up? Are you trying to get in on Fox News? Is that your aspiration?
you should legit be ashamed of yourself for trying to make that count.
Oh no, it's fine. I'm still not going to be wrong. I'm just saying, technically, I'm already like I've won.
No, but I definitely stay away from all three Eldrazi. Like, that's something I'd get out of now.
What about If That Betrays, bro?
Yeah, because
it's a great reprint target. I mean, it's like approaching what, like $13 now, so $14 bucks now.
It's awesome.
I would probably stay away from it too.
I love that card.
Well, because I was my logic for more than just Eldrazi than just Emrakul is they're not going to have a rare way for you to play Emrakul because you can't tap 15 lands and summon Emrakul in limited. It just doesn't happen. Right. So not 15 lands.
It's called Through the Breach.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. They either rare shift Through the Breach down to uncommon, or
I dominate don't trap.
That. They have to have some way. That it's either going to be Eldrazi spawn, or it's going to be Tron lands, or there's going to be some way to play Emrakul in limited.
It's
going
to.
If they do that, they're going to have more than one Eldrazi. Otherwise, why waste all that design space?
Exactly. It's going to be Eldrazi spawn. Like that just seems the natural. I mean, it's a whole mechanic that can
Skittering Invasion and
they can reprint multiple cards around that.
Yeah.
And then it makes like you're Through the Breach and possibly Summoning Trap if that somehow snuck in there. Like that sort of thing looks better too. And then they probably have your three big Eldrazi and then maybe it betrays, maybe not, but they probably have like your, probably like Ulamog's Crusher or Pathraiser of Ulamog or Artisan of Kozul, like stuff like that.
Everyone knows the money to pay attention, for Modern Masters 2 is what's not going to be in there. And I put money on Click and Bob not being back.
Really?
I think they will be.
I don't think they will. They're not played as much as their price warrants right now and for the last 6 months or so. And their price has pretty much stagnated. There was a lot of hype about, you know, after the bannings that Bob was going to be another tier one modern card, but like there was zero copies in the top eight of the Pro Tour. I think that the hype around Bob has pretty much died down and click as well. What plays Click besides fairies? Like
Legacy.
No, that's not true. The Splinter Twin plays it.
Legacy plays it. It's a commander. Still,
that card sees a lot of play, actually. I mean, it's Tiny Leader too, now.
But does it warrant a lot? So it does it warrant that $80 price tag though? That's kind of what I'm trying to
get
at.
I mean, the fact that it's gone from 30 to 80 in 2 years is crazy to me. So like, it has to warrant that, right? Like, that price doesn't just happen because people are like, oh, that card needs to be more expensive. No, like, people would have been perfectly content with that being 50. I agree with Bob because Bob stagnated in price. It has kind of like gone up and shifted slightly, but that was mainly because like, Jun took over for a while there and the price hasn't just like adjusted to go lower. But I think Click, like, I still have people coming for Clicks. I don't sell it nearly as many Bobs. Like, I can have a place out of those in stock for a while.
Yeah, that's probably I can agree with that too. Yeah, we do so
much. It seems like they would do, I don't know. I think we're going to get a 16th mythic when they were 15 in the last set because there are 20 more cards. But like I just feel like they got a lot of cards they want to reprint and not enough design space.
I agree with that. The Praetors are a natural fit for the dragons from the last set. Like, there's five on color. Yeah. The Praetors, some of them, like Vornklex and Elish Norn, are getting up there. It's a good reprint target for those. Like, that's five slots right there. Then you have, like, all three Eldrazi. You have Mox Opal. You have Karn. That's 10. That's already 10 slots. They only have five left.
Karn and Tezzeret. And probably, I bet there will be one either Linvala or Iona in FTV Angels, and I bet the other one will be in Modern Masters.
That's right. Well, let's talk about FTV Angels, because that was the other thing that we talked about when we were talking about Modern Masters reprints in the past was what angels are going to be. Like, is it going to – which of those old angels is it going to be? So given – I mean, we have Linvala, Iona, Avacyn is a possibility for From the Vault Angels. Yeah, I mean, that's probably in there. I mean, do you guys think that – they're going to jam two or more of these $25-plus cards in there, or do you think that's not the case?
The article I wrote on QS this week says, yes, I do think they're going to do that. Because if you look at what they did with Rolling Earthquake and Burning of Jin Yi in the last set, those cards were super expensive, but there's not really a corollary angel. The only angel that's only expensive because it's rare, because it's in, like, you know, Portal Three Kingdoms, is that Chinese Starlit Angel, and that's actually, there is an English equivalent, so it's only based on its rarity that it's, you know, $600. So reprinting it in the FTV actually doesn't really do anything to attenuate its price or get it in the hands of collectors because they want the rare Chinese printing. They don't want a Starlit Angel because they can just get a Portal one for 25 cents. So the fact that there's no $200 card to bring down like they did with those Portal cards, there's no Portal Angel really, so I could see them putting two $30 angels in the set.
I don't think the comparison to the foreign stuff is really that apt because, like, as we've seen with all the different reprints of the foreign stuff, like, when it gets moved to a supplemental product, the price is just not even in the same – it's not even in the same, like, stratosphere as, like, the original, right? So, like, you have Burning of Xinyi, which is, like, $400 for the normal one, and then it's now, like, what, like, a $5 card in the English one. So I don't – I think the better comparison is, like – well, shit, I lost my train of thought there. But, no, I feel like if they don't have Avacyn in it, if they don't have – see, I get Iona and Linvala mixed up. Whichever one's the more expensive one, it's Linvala, right?
Linvala's the more expensive one for the modern. Yeah.
I feel like – well, Linvala first is collapsing because of the pod being
– banned, yeah.
But so I don't see that being as high as it is for very much longer. But then again, it is a mythic from a comparatively less printed set, so that price is buoyed some. I mean, if they don't have at least Avacyn and one of those in there, I don't see any reason for anyone to buy it.
Well, what if they – I think it's – they're all such good, like, flagships. Honestly, like, Avacyn, though, is probably the best flagship because, like, Linvala's price and coolness or whatever is tied to its, like, constructed playability in the sense that – it's not giant and flashy. Iona is pretty flashy, but it's not necessarily, like, fun, you know? Whereas Avacyn is just, like, Iona is good because it screws your opponents. Avacyn is good because it helps you, and that seems like the better, you know, box topper sort of sell this product card to
play. Also, Avacyn is a huge, obvious EDH card. I mean, these FTVs have been naturally, like, the EDH all-star product that Wizards releases once a year. I mean, they're really
Cube
they're
too. Targeted.
Yeah, you're right, Cube too.
And that's why they reprinted Burning of Xinyi. It wasn't for EDH that we needed a rolling earthquake. True. It was for Cube people that are like, I don't want to pay $250 goddamn dollars for a rolling earthquake.
So yeah. I think we can safely say that between Modern Masters 2 and From the Vault Angels, we're going to at least see two of the three out of Avacyn, Linvala, and Iona, and possibly all three. So either way, it seems like, you know, maybe over the next month or so, month and a half, 2 months, you know, while we're in this uptick that occurs at the beginning of every year when people get tax returns, you want to move out of those.
Right. What about Resto Angel?
That's got to be in there, one of those two. Well, and it can only be in From the Vault, so.
It doesn't have to be in there. I mean, Resto's been pretty well. I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in there, but it's not a requirement. It's been printed quite a few times now.
Yeah, it's I don't know, because if you look, there's going to be a lot of $1 angels in there too, so.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be some that, like, I think they're going to use this as a chance to maybe take some of those cheaper angels from some of the first sets, especially the ones that have some clunky wording, clean up the wording a little bit and give them new borders, like, I wouldn't be surprised to be this.
Yeah, Seraph Angels, it sucks, but it's, like, got to be in there.
Seraph, probably, too, from Ice Age, and, like, Archangel.
So I was thinking Radiant, but apparently Radiant's on the reserve list, and they've printed reserve list stuff in FTV before, but I think they said they're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, no, they did that only – like, that was many, many FTVs
ago. That was
ago,
Phyrexian and they Negator. Yeah.
Yep.
It was that – wasn't there one in Relics too? Like,
yeah, no, it was Mox
all
Diamond.
All of FTV Relics, I think.
Mox Diamond.
Yeah. Mox Diamond and Mazavith. Or not – yeah, Mox Diamond and Mazavith.
Reserve?
No, Mazavith wasn't because it's uncommon. Never mind. What's the other one? There was two.
Wasn't it Berserk?
Whatever. So
and Berserk, yeah. There was another card that was, like, less important.
Did you guys throw out an opinion on Kalia?
I mean, Kalia's probably in there. Like, that
Kalia,
would make
the
Kalia's not an angel, bro.
I don't know.
Neither Dragonstorm's not a dragon. Like, that's just such a dumb argument.
That is the good argument. I did serve that one up for you to rebut with that. So.
I mean, it's something
both brawling with Sigmund Ausfresser in the comments of our articles this week.
Yep.
Like, I could be – I love see Sarah Avatar being in there, even though I don't think that that's an angel either. I'm pretty sure it's an avatar or elemental or something. I mean, like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, that's just the kind of cards they could put in there.
Sarah Avatar doesn't have flying.
It doesn't have flying.
I don't think Sarah Avatar is getting in there. That's like Kalia actually references angels. I mean,
no, I agree. Right, I'm just saying they can stretch quite a ways.
Hold up. This is so much what abouts and speculations. Like, what if none of these cards are in there? And then we just spent the past 10, 15 minutes on all these possibilities and none of these cards are Modern Masters.
Well, I'm sorry that it was four of us were having fun and you weren't.
Yeah, it was fun, Marcel.
I know.
Our listeners are having fun yelling at their radios like now, like, shut up, nerds!
Well, this is what I do. I'm the fun killer, but we got to move along because we have a lot to talk about.
Snark!
Oh, all right, move us along. Where are we going?
The fun police. So what's Finance 101? What you guys are doing for Finance 101? Are you going to incorporate?
FTP angles. There, done.
Finance 101. Okay, here's one. If you, and this is something we've told you in the past before, kind of stay away from foreign cards because they're harder to move. As of now, TCG Player has opened up foreign cards to the market. They are definitely going higher for a lot of the staple cards, but this gives just the random people an outlet. I haven't seen how good the sales are on it yet, so I wouldn't go out like seeking foreign cards yet, but people have kind of come to the understanding over the past couple of years that foreign cards are really hard to move, and you can usually get them actually for less. It used to be you got a real premium on them, and that might start rising again since there's an open market to it as well.
How are they indexed on TCG Player, Ryan? Do you know if are they searchable? Will it bring up both?
What it does is, okay, so on your left-hand sidebar, there is now checkboxes, and you could say, I want to see all the ones that are foreign, I want to see all the ones that are English, and just English is the primary. So you're not going to be, like, if you don't want this at all, it's not going to change your TCG experience at all. But you go on there and you can check, you know, say you want German, Polluted Delta. You type in Polluted Delta, you go over and check the box, or you can check it and go through a bunch of German cards. If you only want one language, it makes it very easy. You just leave that box checked.
But what about the people that just want the overall cheapest copy?
There's a way you can check English and then non-English. You can check them both and just say, you know, like click on the same way. And
so
it'll bring it up
just like this is really interesting because, like, I actually posted this question to the MTG Finance Facebook group a while ago, just as like a discussion starter. I had a card out of one of the portal sets, I don't remember which, or from the dark or something random, and it was foreign. And it was like a $2, $3 card in English. And the buy list on it was like $1.50. Okay, so, you know, it's like not a bulk card. It's not something I want to throw in with the bulk. But I had this foreign copy that's never going to move. You know, it's not like, obviously no store wants to buy this foreign copy of this random card, and I can't put it in my binder because nobody's even going to know what it does because it's really obscure.
Yeah,
but, you know, it is technically worth $3 in English at least. So this is actually an outlet for those cards now. So, like, you were never going to find that buyer in real life for this random $3 Japanese card you had, but you might find it now that you can put it up on TCG Player. So for that, it's actually pretty cool.
It's a good out, but it's a nightmare to list. As of right now, the way that you have to do it is you have to like go through the TCG Player backend and like select, and like most of the stores online are through Crystal Commerce. Like we have a Crystal Commerce store and it's basically like you use Crystal Commerce for your inventory management. And, when you select a card, you can select, you've been able to select different languages forever. TCG is finally just allowing it, but instead of just saying like I want all my Tassigers and I have like 8 Japanese Tassigers at this price, the way that Crystal Commerce does it is it's a multiplier. So you don't have you can set individual multipliers, but I mean there's 14,000 cards, right? So so the cards like Snapcaster, whose Japanese price is like 4x, whereas like your standard cards are usually like 1.2 to 2x. It's a little bit difficult to get the right price as far as what the market is dictating now. I think what this is going to do is it's going to cause a shift because this, other than eBay, is the largest outlet for foreign cards. So what we're going to see is we're going to see a normalizing of prices across the board, and we're going to see like strict multipliers because that's the only way for guys like me who do like insane volume in order to get the stuff up is you just have to use a multiplier. So that's how I see things going in the future. Like you can even like isolate it to standard, modern, and legacy, and like you'll have like a standard multiplier of 2x for Japanese and then 4x for legacy, etc. So I think that's how it's going to go.
There's always going to be part of that you're going to have to do manually though, because you just can't, there's cards that are so much harder and so much higher on that multiplier. Like there's no way to stand,
yeah,
there's no like, way to standardize that.
Excuse me. You'll have like your 4 or 5 like big staples like Tarmogoyf and that kind of stuff that you'll have to set, you know, on your own. But like I think for the most part, people are going to accept like a standard multiplier, because that's how everyone's going to be doing it. Like, I've talked to other vendors since this thing has gone online, and that seems to be the case. Like, it's just the only way that we can, like, when we come back from a GP and we have 20,000 cards, and like, let's say, like, now when I go to a GP, I can actually buy foreign cards. So, like, I'll have, like, let's say a third, well, I'm probably not that high, probably like, you know, a fourth of, or a fifth that I'll be putting online, and it's just much easier to set the multiplier for that stuff that's not like Snapcaster and Tarmogoyf and stuff.
Right. But actually what I'm more concerned about is not the rares like that. It's the commons on commons. That's really where you see the huge multiplier differences.
Yeah, that is a good point.
And you still want to be able to buy those cards and list them. So I don't know if there's a way to do it. Like, maybe you standardize the rares and then you have to like create a list of the commons on commons. And maybe it's like, you can actually usually isolate it to particular sets. Because it's usually like difficult to find sets. Obviously the foreign foils are going to be insanely hard to find, like seventh edition things like that.
Right.
Anyway, well, most people don't care about this, so we should probably...
Well, I mean, it's definitely a new world for people, yeah. So...
So what's the finance 101 out of this? What are we giving people? That seems like...
You can sell foreign cards now.
And yeah, foreign cards are going to be really
more valuable, I think, overall. Because there's a better out. Like I said, I can buy foreign cards now en masse. I was before, but I can buy foreign cards en masse now. And so can every other vendor out of the 14 that are... Shit, now it's like 20 at every event. We can all buy foreign cards now because we have an out for it. So, you know, I think that foreign cards are going to be worth more. As of right now, you can trade them straight across usually with a binder, like at some event with most people, unless it's like something insane. But I feel that for the most part, foreign cards are going to be, the demand is going to go way up on them. Cause the people who want to get them, they can now have, you know, vendors sell them now.
Yep. Cause vendors aren't afraid to buy them. So they'll stock them and.
Exactly.
So people will trade amongst themselves, so they'll be like, yeah, I'll take that foreign card. And
I mean, that was kind of happening already, but now, like, trying to find that guy and trade with that guy is not your only out.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just like, yeah, the ease of moving the product makes it so that it's more appealing to pick up as a vendor. And the more appealing it is to the vendors, the easier the market is on it. So, like, the more likely it is to rise.
Oh, man, all positives.
Yeah, it's very good for the entire thing.
It's
like,
very
this is something that has been like a lot of people, like I contacted TCG Player about this like a year and a half ago. So this is something that, like, people have known is coming, but it's been years in the, you know, kind of like the promise. And so it's really nice to see it finally here. It was the kind of same thing like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh for the longest time to get that stuff listed up. And then like HeroClix, same thing. I mean, it's a slow process, but it's kind of understandable. It takes them a long time to get all that stuff into the back end. It's just unfortunate to have to wait for a lot of it.
So let's move on to the next part. What's on the docket? Do we have a...
Well, we would like to take a second. We don't really do ads on this podcast, but we one of the ways we're looking to expand our offerings as a podcast is we have a Patreon campaign going right now. It's at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery. We will furnish a link to it in the show notes. If you guys feel like you get value from this podcast, if we've made you some money, if we've simplified your life, you can support us for as little as $1 an episode and help us, you know, hire more writers, get some video content going. We have prizes for supporting us. So go ahead and check out our Patreon campaign and maybe think about supporting us if you feel like you value our podcast.
Yeah, and we've hit our first goal already, so we're going to start getting, like, After Hours, right?
After Hours, yeah, is going to come out, I believe. It says once a month. We're going to try to do it bi-weekly. And the next milestone will be video content. So that will be once a week. It'll be like a 5-minute video with one of us that will just be candid, you know, raw, no editing per se, and just going at it, giving you some up to date, right at the minute, finance stuff going on. So that's going to be exciting to see if that could come out.
Yeah. All right. We got an email next, guys. It's been a minute since we've done some emails, but, we're on to the email. This one comes to us from Stephen Eula. I believe is how I would pronounce that name. He says, hey guys, I've been listening to the podcast for almost a year now, and you guys have given me some great insight on the world of Magic Finance. Now that I have all this knowledge, I want to start putting it to use. I'm running into one big problem, though. Where do I start? Despite playing for 12 years off and on, my own personal collection is nothing special. I've been dumping stuff of any value every couple years on eBay or buy lists, and I've been searching Craigslist, but everyone seems to overvalue their collections, and the pickings are really slim here in the Philadelphia area. I unfortunately don't have an LGS or comic shop that doesn't already sell singles where I can create a situation to sell there. I have started looking at collections on eBay, but I feel like that is such a gamble. I have $500 to get this ball going. I would really love to hear your feedback. Thanks. He says, P.S. I hope you guys are able to respond before I give up and spend my money on hookers and crack instead. And P.S.S. We have excellent FOGO here.
Come on, man. Hookers and blows the way to go, not crack.
I was going to say, I have a feeling this is definitely what we're going to be recommending Steve spend his $500 on. But assuming he wants to keep it to Magic for whatever reason, I mean...
I guess I could take this one.
Sure.
All right, so what I would recommend is... just find collections. Like, just, you have to have, man, it's tough to start from nothing. Like, I've been playing Magic for 20 years, and I have pretty much been on and off, like, four or five times, and every time I'll sell my collection and then come back in, and like usually what I do is I'll buy a case or a few boxes of the newest set and then just grind it up from there, or I'll buy a small collection. It just, you have two options. You can either buy, like, with $500 you can definitely get a case for about that much of, like, let's say Dragons when it comes out. Then he can have all those sweet cards that everybody wants and just trade that away immediately. Just get rid of all that stuff, because all that stuff's going to be at the height of the market. So you're going to get the most at that time. Or you can just find, like, somebody who's selling their collection, like somebody locally, somebody in your network. That's the best way to get collections. It's not, like, in my experience anyway, it's not like eBay or Craigslist or whatever. Definitely find people who you know who are playing Magic who want to get out. And that's what I would recommend, is either buy a collection from there and grind it up, or just buy like a case or a few boxes.
Yeah, like the guy who you used to play Magic with and you haven't seen him around the shop for 6 months. You know, like, that's the kind of guy who has the card sitting at home, doesn't play Standard anymore, may not even play Magic that much, who, if you just contact him and were like, hey man, how you know, what's up? We haven't seen you around. He's like, well, I'm not into it. You say, well, you know, if you're ever interested in getting rid of your stuff and you don't want to sell it to a store, let me know. I'd be interested. I mean, that's a nice way to kind of scare up some business out of nowhere. But in my experience, I mean, and I think we can probably all attest to this because we all kind of started at that level where we didn't have anything. It really is just a grind, in the sense that it takes time to develop contacts and have people recommend other people to come to you and sell you their stuff.
Your network is invaluable. I can't state that enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was getting collections on referral, like, years before I had set up that situation at the shop. You know, before I was a financier, I was buying collections. So it's all a matter of just having a good reputation and dealing with people fairly, and learning how to not buy a collection. Like, I've had people refer me to their friends after I turned them down and told them where to sell their collection for more somewhere else in town. So you got to learn how to not buy a collection too.
Yeah.
But it's just being personable. And if I can be personable, you can absolutely do it.
Because Jason's an asshole. That's the point there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was implying, you fucking idiot.
I just wanted to call you an asshole. That's all.
That's what we're talking about, huh? Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, and like I said, if you really are able to put – if your goal is – in Philadelphia, I imagine there's probably vicious cutthroat competition for collections. If your goal is instead to build your own collection up, like Kyle suggested, getting a new set and start trading this stuff out, man, and you just start grinding out the trade tables. Sooner or later, you get in new stuff, you trade it out, you'll find somebody somewhere who wants to trade you a Modern or Legacy Stable for the new Standard stuff that they want, and it just grows on itself, and it doesn't look like you're getting very far. It's most certainly work, and it's a grind, but a year later you look at your collection and it's multiplied several times over.
So let's say, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're the guest.
So that would be step one, right? Step one is getting stuff to trade out. And step two would be reading all the information you can about just finance in general. Get on QS, get on brainstormbrewery.com, get on all the different resources out there that you have available to you, and just learn what cards, like, hold value. Learn about, like, basically blue chips, like dual lands and like legacy staples like Snapcaster Mage, like, and just move all that stuff into all the stuff that you opened, all the new stuff you have, into those staples that are just, you know, they're gonna hold their value for a long time. And then once you have a good base to start, then you can start really like jumping into like, oh, I think this card's gonna blow up, so I'm gonna buy every Tastiger I see or whatever. And that's what I would recommend, is like, that step two is to build up a solid base collection that's a decent value, that's gonna keep going up a little bit, not a ton. It's not exciting, but that's the best way to build your portfolio.
And if you don't have what people want, be willing to get what they want. If you go places and people are like, man, I don't want an FTV foil Jace, I want a set foil Jace. If you're going to a GP, if you're going to the SCG thing here coming up in Baltimore, I think some guys from Philly are going down. If you're going somewhere that the people just at your home shop that are a little intimidated by that aren't going to go to, you can make yourself valuable to them by going and getting something, and you can trade that stuff for a premium based on the convenience factor. Now, I've done that for people a lot, too.
Well, and people respect you a lot when you do that. I mean, if you go out of your way, if you don't have, somebody says, hey, do you have this? And no, I don't, but I'll, you know, give me a week, I'll find it for you. And then you do it.
And then you're their guy forever.
Yeah, it goes a long way.
Yep. Yeah. And then traveling is just awesome anyway, because like, you know, you may see like one or two pieces of power in your first year, like, because you don't really go outside of your local area. And then you start traveling, go to SCG and stuff, and you see like, oh, that's just another Mox Emerald, whatever. You know, there's so many more cards available in binders, you know, to trade into that you can bring back to your local area and just, you know, build your collection that way too.
Yeah, being jaded by power is a good feeling.
It is. You know what really like, I don't know, gets my attention is like really cool rare foils for some reason. Like misprints. When I'm sitting there, misprint,
everybody has
really
their
sell
thing, right?
Misprints. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we all have our different things.
EDH foils that are like insane that you just never see. Like some guy will have like a Mox Emerald and like a Tabernacle or whatever. I'm just like, whatever. But then when they have like, I don't know, random EDH foil that's like $100 that you never, like invasion foils that are like $45 and like the normal card's like $1. That's the stuff that like really like, oh, that's really cool. I've never seen that and I've been doing this forever.
Well, I really like old Korean stuff too. Like,
yeah, like Saga Korean?
Yeah, like old printing Korean. That's one of the big things I collect too. I have rows of that.
Yeah, this stuff's really cool. Just stuff that you just don't ever see, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to find something interesting in this to like keep you passionate about wanting to find more cards. Cause like you can only find so many, you know, fantastic $20 and $30 cards in bulk before like it still becomes old. Yeah. So you still have to have things in the game that excite you.
What about Ice Age Saddlebags?
Yeah, Ice Age Gender Saddlebags. I'm weird. I would rather have 200 unglued islands than a Mox. That's just me. I'm just weird like that.
Not the way the power's been going lately for me.
Yeah.
It's getting quite ridiculous, but that's a whole nother scenario.
Well, yeah, well, let's move in and talk about that. Kyle, I mean, tell us your story. You say you've been playing Magic for 20 years. How did you go from, I'm a random teenager who's playing Magic at the dawn of time in the 90s to, you know, I'm a guy who owns a store and I'm in every Grand Prix and I am jaded by power? How did you get started?
All right, so I guess I'll give the smaller, the shorter version, since I elaborated pretty deeply on the Quiet Speculation interview, and I did another interview with Aaron Campbell of at Gathering Magic. But for me, what I did was I was never really very good at Magic. Like I love the game. I like playing it. It's a lot of fun, but I'm just kind of too ADD to find all the lines. And I learned early on when I would O2 drop at tournaments that like I could pay for my tournament and then some by just grinding trades. So I got very good at that pretty quickly, and I would build the collection up and then sell it whenever I got bored of it. And then I would build, you know, I would do that over and over again. And then how I got into this business is I was a government contractor in Afghanistan for like 3 years. Before that I was in the Air Force, and in between that I was a normal contractor working like on base in Ohio. And I went overseas. I was there for like 24 out of 33 months. So like 15 months straight, and then like, you know, a couple breaks here and there. But when we were over there, you just made like an insane money over there. And then I came back and I was like, I don't really want to do that anymore. And I was playing the finance game while I was over there. So like the last, like the time before I came home for good, I bought out the internet of, Lilies and Snapcasters and Foil Snaps and, Geist. So I just went super deep on basically those four cards. And this was when Lily was like $30 and Geist was like $8, I think. And then they both, you know, all of them just took a huge spike. And then I sold out as soon as I got back. And, you know, I was like, wow, I made a really good amount of money doing this. You know, why don't I, like, look at this more seriously? So then me and my business partner, or my good friend, we went to GPDC, like, not 2014, but 2013. And, again, I O2 dropped, and then I went and started talking to some of the vendors, specifically Cam at MTG Car Market. He was really, really candid about what it takes to get something like that started, what kind of money you can make and stuff. And, you know, I owe a lot of my beginnings to that conversation. And me and Cam are good friends now. But so me and my friend were like, you know, we could really do this. Yeah, I have the bankroll to get this something like this started, and he had the business know-how. And so it was just like I went overseas for another 6 months or 5 months, and just kind of like looked into it, looked into the Crystal Commerce thing, you know, and just jumped kind of head first. And just, I set up two GPs for the month that I got back. I did, GP Cincy and GP, Philly. And I couldn't even sell them TCG because, when you're a store like this, you have like a certain time that you have to sit there and, like, they have to, like, approve you. So it took, like, 4 to 6 weeks, I think. It took, like, like 6 weeks. And then I finally got on after those two GPs, and I had, like, a ton of inventory. And that was pretty much it. I just been rolling that inventory ever since and just kind of learning, you know, the circuit and the guys on the circuit and expanding my network and kind of, like, building my brand and stuff. And, you know, I'm here now, and we've got, like, we're going to try to hit every American GP this year. Last year, I'm trying to think of how many we've done so far. Probably like 9, I think. We've done 9 GPs so far. And, this year we'll, this May we have, from May to like July, we have like 9 GPs. So yeah, it's been an incredible growth. It's been a lot of fun too. And, it's kind of gotten out of hand a couple times, but, yeah, it's been amazing.
What does out of hand mean? You're just drowning in cards?
Oh my, so initially, we came back, like I said, from those two GPs, and we just had tons and tons of cards. And we're like, okay, how are we going to sort all this and inventory it and grade it and put it online? So I hired a couple guys, and I hired a couple more. And then I was like, well, we probably hired too many people. So we let a couple people go. And then, you know, it's been a monumental learning process. And it's, you know, I'm very passionate about like working for myself and, you know, motivated. And lately I've been putting in like 12 to 16 hour days to just try to get everything accomplished. And like, you know, when I was working in Afghanistan, yeah, I was in Afghanistan, but the job wasn't, you know, I was flying, and I was flying like 8 to 10 hours or so a day. And then I'd come back and just go to the gym and go to sleep. And it was more of like a grind, but this is more of like, I don't know. It's my thing, and I can just throw all of my passion and, you know, make it my hobby. And it's I love it because I pretty much can make it. I either make it or break it, and it's up to me, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
But yeah, there's been a lot of growing pains and experience. You know, I didn't have any kind of educational background, business or anything like that. I just kind of like was like, I have some money. I know a lot about magic. Let's make this happen. And I just jumped headfirst. Like, I actually made a big thread on QS about like what my plans were before I did it. And like Nick Beckfar and Sean Johnson, they both like gave me a bunch of advice. And most of that advice was like, don't do it. You're gonna fail. You know, it's a much bigger thing than what you're thinking. And they were definitely right. It was a lot more work involved. It wasn't as easy as just like, hey, let me pay, you know, X amount for a booth and then show up and then buy all the cards. You know, I was a nobody. So it's been a lot of experience and grinding that network and just, you know, doing the best that I can to get where I'm at now. But, yeah, we've got a lot of potential ahead of us, and it's a lot of fun, man. We got a lot of plans in the works. We got a lot of things coming up. So,
I mean, do you have any, tell us, I mean, this has got to be right. You say you didn't know a ton about it going in. I mean, what's like your funniest or, you know, your horror story of, when you're getting into it, something you just didn't know that happened upon you one day. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
All right. I think I have something. So when me and my friend and former business partner Josh, when we were putting this whole thing together, I was in Afghanistan. I pretty much email blasted everybody, all the tournament organizers to try to do GPs. And Professional Event Services was the ones that we did first, and they allowed us to bid on two at once. So I paid for two up front, and it was Cincy and Philly, which were like – it was Cincy, and then 2 weeks later was Philly. And at the time, it was just me and Josh. You know, I had a I think we had combined like $25,000 in retail and in collection that we were bringing with us. And, I had money with me, and that's how we started the whole thing. And when we were inventorying our collection and trying to put it all together to get ready for the GP, like, you know – I had a week from the time I got back from Afghanistan until this GP fired. So I had a week to get ready with just me and Josh, right?
Yeah.
So I went down to a local card shop. I was like, maybe we need a little bit of help. I'm going to need some help at the event anyway. And we talked to a few people, and I ended up finding this guy named Keith, who's now my head buyer. He's the guy who buys cards for me. He's very good at it too. And I was explaining to him what I wanted to do, and you know, I need some help on this event. And he was like, cool, I'll come by. So he came by like 2 days before the event. We had like nothing ready. He's like, dude, do you guys have any idea what this entails? Like, you have to inventory and price and everything, like, and you guys aren't even close to being ready. We're like, what? Like, oh, I guess you're right. And, yeah, so we just worked nonstop for 2 days straight. That morning we actually overslept by about an hour because we passed out at like 5 and we had an hour drive since
ideal start to your career. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we get there and like it was nonstop from the minute we opened and we set up until that Sunday when we left, because there was only three of us. We were way in over our heads after that, but it was such a rush that that's it. That's all it took. Like, I was hooked from that minute on.
That's awesome. So, I mean, you've certainly learned a lot more about it now. Is it a little smoother when you pack up for an event that nowadays?
Oh, yeah, man. We have a whole system in place now for literally everything. Like, we come back, we prep for a GP that usually takes a couple days to price and to pull from inventory what we're going to bring with us. And then we have that arranged, so it's like we know exactly what case it goes into. We have all our stuff set aside in big totes for, you know, it's all organized. And then when we get there, we know exactly how to set up and tear down. It takes us very little time anymore because we've done it so many times. And then when we get back, it's like, you know, nose to the grindstone. We get back, we take the 20,000 or so cards or whatever we have from that event, and we inventory, grade it, sort it. I'm sorry, grade, sort and inventory it. And then, you know, hopefully we have most of that online within 24 hours. And then, yeah, so we have, you know, all of our processes in place now. So it's so, pretty much just a machine.
Right. I mean, that's how you want it. I mean, what's your advice to somebody out there who is looking to get set up, and maybe they don't want to get to the level of, you know, maybe they're not, I'm going to go jump in at the GP level and I'm going to learn that way. Maybe they just want to, you know, start a moderately sized store on TCG Play or something. I mean, what's your advice to those people kind of looking to take the next step?
The biggest bottleneck in this is finding cards. So you have to have like either a steady collection supply, which there's really no such thing, or you have to do like events. And it sucks with the new PTQ format because right. like all the, that's what the next step would have been. You know, if you asked me this, you know, 6 months right. ago, that's what I would say go do, you know, get in with local stores who run the smaller events and, you know, be a vendor there. Those tables are like anywhere from two to $1,000, you know, and they're so lucrative. Like, if I could do a smaller event every single day instead of GPs, I wouldn't even do GPs because that's how lucrative the smaller events are. But, you know, it really cut down on the options available, because now, like, your only next step is to do SCG events, which is impossible now because the word is out about how lucrative those are, because there's only three vendors and 700 to 800 people. Or like, just keep grinding it the way you've been doing it. Just grind and grind and grind. Like, I don't know, maybe Ryan could probably answer that a little bit better than I could. Cause I know that, you know, I'm familiar with the way that you do things a little bit, but, I know that you don't go the whole store route, but you do pretty good volume, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's something I talked about on the MTG Finance group on Facebook the other day. you just kind of have to find your niche. You have to decide what part of this business you're passionate about, because everyone just like assumes MTG Finance encompasses everything, right? Well, like, I'm sure you can talk about this. Since you've gotten the store open, how many of the things that like maybe you used to love to do have kind of gone by the wayside because like you just, you can't afford your time to do those things anymore. And suddenly like you're put into a role where like you kind of have to, you know, do some things that you might not have wanted to before. Like accounting comes to mind for me. I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's why I took on a partner, was to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so you really have to find that like happy median where it's something that you're willing to dedicate that much time towards because you feel strongly about it, but not something that you're going to be drained for putting that much time and effort into.
Right. Yeah, you, well, and eventually you come to a make it or break it point where you're like, okay, you know, this is, I'm all in, or I'm just gonna, you know, keep doing what I'm doing. And like for me, luckily that was when, you know, it was made up for me. I could just choose to do it, but you know, it's a big all in thing. Like, you know, I didn't have health insurance for a little while because, you know, I was a brand new company and it was tough to set up. And you know, it's little things like that that, you know, and I do a lot of sorting and grading and inventorying, even though I have guys to do that, just because sometimes the workload is too much. Like the thing is, if you want to do something like this full time, you have to realize that you now have a job that's 24 hours. Like, you cannot stop. If I'm out with like dinner with a friend or something and somebody emails me about a collection, like I have to respond right then and there. I have to say, yeah, here's, you know, cool. I'll get you a price as soon as I get back, because that guy's just going to go to like some other store and be like, okay, well, you didn't respond in time. So, you know, and that's money that I lost out on. So it's a 24 hour job. Yeah.
I know we all have stories about that. things you do with collections. I interrupted my wife and I. We took a day trip to go hiking somewhere, and we were planning on heading out to dinner on the way back. And I was like, "Yeah, Marianne, this guy who lives in this town, because we were several hours away from home. He's like, this guy who lives in this town said he can meet us in like an hour. Would you mind if we like, you know, delayed dinner for a little while?" And we swung by and met up with him. And I'm sure we all have plenty of stories like that.
I have stayed in a hotel room 3 hours away from my home 2 days in a row to try and pick up a collection that I still
and
never
he didn't
got.
Get.
And, he live texted us the whole time.
By the guy's
his girlfriend.
Well, yeah,
it was
hours.
One of the worst experiences of
that's
my
right.
life.
We had hourly updates from that. That was.
Did we do that on the podcast? Because that should be after hours.
I feel like we talked about that. I don't know. I remember that happening in real time.
That was
man. I've done some things for this business.
Some stuff and some things.
People outside their shady apartment, and they want to hand. You know, it feels very drug dealery sometimes.
Oh yeah.
I take a knife and backup.
I make sure actually, like when I moved into this house, because there's always people like stopping over to my house. 'Cause I run my business out of my home. So any of my local players I deal with, like they just come over to my house and do it. 'Cause I mostly sell to the vendors. So I don't really need an office or like a storefront or anything like that. So like I've constantly have people in and out, and so I kind of like drop the hint on all of my neighbors while I'm talking to them, like, no, this is, you know, like this is what I do for a living, very clearly, so that, you know, the person, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a day, the people stopping
over. You don't go
over, to jail. Yeah. I don't want my house like held up.
Yeah, you just don't want to be laughed at by cops when they kick in your door and then see you playing magic.
You're covered in magic cards, yeah.
Didn't I give you a wedgie in high school?
Yeah, mine's out of my house too. We don't actually have a store, and I don't know if I ever want one, to be honest, but yeah, it's funny. I have 3 employees, and sometimes, like, you know, whenever I'm up doing, you know, owner stuff till like 3 in the morning, I'll get up at like 10 or something, and like my guys are already here, like in my house. It's the weirdest thing, but I had to tell all my neighbors, yeah, I have like 4 cars here all the time. It's not because I'm like trashy or anything. It's because I actually have a business out of my house. So please don't tow my employees' cars.
Well, so you don't want to go the LGS route?
You know, it's almost a necessary evil at this point, because you have to have like a home base, you know,
right,
especially for branding.
Right.
But like we did the project, like we were going to open one in March of this year. We did the projections, and like financially, I would just rather like run GPs. Like it's just you make much more doing that, and like, you know, it's a huge headache to actually have a physical location.
Oh yeah. I feel like Jason and I actually have the perfect setup, in that we get
all
the benefits of an LGS. You know, if somebody wants to meet us to sell us cards, we meet there. It's all very official. It's great. you're not meeting in someone's house or in a parking lot, but we don't have to worry about any of the rest of it that comes with it.
Everybody has their own niche, right?
I actually sometimes work. That part's not so bad because you don't have to be there if you don't want to be.
Yeah, everybody finds that thing that they're good at. Like in mine, the three stores that I'm working with right now, anytime they get collections in, they pull the stuff they want, they give it to me, I take 50% and take anything out that's worth money because they just don't pick down to the 3 cent, 5 cent quarter cards. Even you find plenty of $2, $3, $4, $5 cards and that kind of stuff because they just don't have the time to process it. So everybody just has to find what they're good at.
Yeah, I just give my buy list to all the local stores and just have them ship to me because I pay like GP prices and they pay like LGS prices. So it's like, it's pretty easy.
Yep.
Please don't ever do that to me because I pay, I pay LGS prices.
Well, you're in Oklahoma, right? I don't think I'd ever want to go to Oklahoma.
Well, that's fair.
That's a fact.
No, I just got to say, like, you guys, I listened to your podcast a lot when I was in Afghanistan because, you know, you have a lot of downtime pretty much. It was a lot of, I learned a lot from you guys and I just wanted to say, you know, like, thanks, I guess, because I learned a lot from you guys and, I just listened to you guys a lot whenever I was out there.
Nerd.
Well, Jason yells nerd. I was going to say thank you. That's very kind and we appreciate it. But, you know, either response is probably the same. But it's been great to have you on the cast too. I love it being able to get the, you know, someone who's done all this and done it recently to be able to get their perspective on things.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned, but yeah, I started this like in March of last year, so this isn't even like really a year old yet.
Yeah. What's the coolest...
We kind of got progress updates like in the QS forums and like just seeing the questions you were asking evolve, and then we started seeing you at events. It was really kind of cool.
Tell me this. I have one more, you know, off the wall question here. What is the coolest thing you've come across? We were talking about it earlier, and I feel like you showed me a test print City of Traders. Is that true?
I didn't show you a City of Traders. That's actually like $12. It was a test print City of Brass, which I
currently own. City of Brass. Yeah. I see.
But the coolest thing, is that kind of stuff. Test prints that, very rarely make it out of Wizards, and they shouldn't actually be outside of Wizards, but they get out sometimes. But we come across that every now and then, and it's usually one or two really big players, like really big collectors that have that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's all part of building our network and that kind of stuff. Like, there's just certain guys that see us at every event. He's like, hey, check out this new cool stuff I have. And I'm just like, geez, man, that's like $1 million binder, you know, like real stuff. Yeah. Like, that's not even an exaggeration, like.
Yeah, some of those binders, you just wonder, like, why do you even have that in the room?
I know, like
wow. Why don't you have an armed guard?
I mean, it has to be insured.
The one time. I met these guys who I deal with a lot now, the $1 million binder guy is like, dude, like, you have to have, like, protection, right? And he just opens his bag and there's, like, a Glock in there. He's like, yeah, I'm covered, man. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, man.
I just insured my collection, but you know what? That's one way to go about it.
Yeah, yeah.
A Glock is insurance.
That sure.
Depends on how good of a shot you are.
That's right. We want to do picks of the weeks, guys?
It's time for the pick of the week.
Yeah, let's put Kyle on the spot.
I want every Tassiger, I want every Siege Rhino, and I want every Promo Ugin I can get my hands on.
All right, let's ask about this. You want these cards because you can sell them well and you pay buy list, or do you actually think that there's upside on them?
In San Jose, I was paying $8 on Tassiger because I feel like there's tons of upside on him.
I would have given you all the Tassigers.
Yeah, I was paying $5 on Siege Rhino when it was still $6, so... I was paying 26 at one point for Ugins. I feel like those cards all have like major upside, especially like, I feel like Tassiger is, a lot of people are saying this, but like, is possibly the next Tarmogoyf, but it'll never be on that same financial level because it's in a later set than Future Sight was.
And it's a rare, yeah.
It's a rare also, yeah. I feel like it just the pure raw power of the card is very impressive and it's going to be a major player. And it's only going to take supply to dwindle before that card goes up. Seedra, I know the same freaking situation. I feel like that card is just insane. It's a lot of fun to actually cast. I've actually been playing Magic lately, which I haven't done in, like, since I started the whole thing.
That's weird.
I called you a nerd prematurely. I should have waited.
Yeah. And then Ugin just seems also, like, just very powerful. And the promo, I feel, is never going to be reprinted. Maybe, like, as a dual deck scenario, but, you know, they've always done new art for the dual decks. And I doubt that they would come out with this Ugin and then, like, dampen it by making a foil version for a dual deck. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, it's an alt art already, right? So, I mean, yeah. Didn't they do that? Oh, I'm not even going to be able to think of the right card here. Bloodbraid Elf, maybe?
Yeah, they did that with the FNM.
Yeah, that was
one.
The plain chant. Yeah. Yeah, they had it for foil for FNM, and then they used the non-foil
of
that same art in plain chase.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess it's the same. It's, yeah, like you said, it's not – like there's a foil to non-foil comparison as opposed to going foil to non-foil the other
way
around.
I'll give you guys a hint. I won't give out everything. I can't give away all my cards, but I'll give you a hint as to why that card is worth so much, and it has almost nothing to do with the United States.
Go on.
I can't really say too much more, but that card, there is a lot of demand for it. A lot.
For the alternate?
The alternate art Ugin. Yeah, that card, everybody's like, wow, it's $200. There's no way it's going to maintain that price. It will absolutely maintain that price. At the very least.
Because everybody who's not from the United States wants it, I'm gathering.
Yeah.
Was that not at non-American pre-releases?
The word that I got was no, it was not in, it was not printed in any other language, and it was not given away at, other pre-releases outside of the United States.
Wow.
I see. That's... we did not know, and we spent like 10 minutes last week talking about it. I actually did not realize that they didn't do that promo in other places.
That's spicy. See, this is the information you get when you're a dealer and you talk to people.
Yeah, I guess so. It helps.
You're as good a resource for us as we are for you. I will absolutely tell you that. Following you on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's I was reluctant to get on Twitter at first, and then I had a couple spats with Nick, and it's a lot of fun.
Arguing with Nick Bekvar on Twitter is probably the best thing about it.
Yeah, if it's not good for me, why do I get an erection every time I do it?
I don't know, but it's fantastic.
I think we've all gotten to plenty of arguments with Bekvar. It's pretty fun.
And now he wants to buy for me, so I think I won out.
All right. Yeah, we all like Nick here. All right, who wants to go next on the pick of the week?
I will. I got a crazy one. You guys are going to argue with me, and I can't wait.
Right.
Extra planar lens is like $8-$9 right now. It's approaching 10. I don't think that 10 is the ceiling on this, because Gauntlets of Power does something kind of similar, and that's about $10. But there were more Gauntlets of Power, because that was printed later in Time Spiral. An extra planar lens is printed earlier in Mirrodin. What you do with extra planar lens is you sack a snow-covered land in EDH, and then all your opponents that have the same kind of basics as you get screwed. They don't get the bonus. So if you play something like Vernal Bloom or, you know, Rite of Replication or a fair mana ramps card like that, that they get the benefit of, that's one thing. But if you are using extra planar lens, so only snow-covered swamps tab for extra mana, that's good. I noticed that Scrying Sheets has been creeping up, and that's what made me want to see what extra planar lens was doing. Scrying Sheets isn't just because of EDH. Scrying Sheets, there's like Scred Red popping up in Modern, and I think Scrying Sheets is just good. But like anything that is specific to snow-covered lands, I think long-term is going to go up. So I think it actually might have higher upside than Gauntlet of Power. Gauntlet of Power is the one from Time Spiral, right? Gauntlet of Might is... the old one, Gauntlet of Power is the new one. Whatever one is from Time Spiral. I think it's got more upside.
It's Gauntlet of Power.
I think it's got more upside than that because it's older, and I think it's less fair. So I really like extra planar lens at about $8. I don't really know what the foil's up to. I mean, that's obviously just something that's like you just pay that price and then have it. I wouldn't say buy out the foils necessarily. But I kind of like I like extra planar lens below $10 right now.
I think that's actually a really good call, Jason. You're right. Both of those cards you mentioned, that and the gauntlets, have been creeping up.
Yeah,
that seems like a pretty good call.
That's just EDH demand.
Gauntlet of Power is something I can never keep in stock. Like, it's just, every time I get them, I'm like, okay, that card's gone.
Oh, okay, update. You know what's insane? There's a 2x multiplier on foil extra planar lens. That's not correct. 2x multiplier is non-correct on playable EDH foils.
Got to agree with you.
Huh. Well, okay, not necessarily not the foil, then. And the foils will be easier to, you know...
I guess you happened upon that call, Jason. I actually think it's a really good call.
Well, I accidentally, crap, I'm glad I checked. Yeah, the foil's only 20?
That seems low.
Yeah.
That's going to be bought out before this podcast is released.
Fine.
No, it won't be. That's not what we do.
I know. I'm just going to, I got to feel the fire.
So, actually, Jason, yours kind of segues perfectly into mine. Speaking of $20 foils.
You're not next, though.
No, let him go next.
I am next.
Fine. Go ahead.
So, speaking of $20 foils, and a card that probably shouldn't be a $20 foil, but is Outpost Siege. That is absolutely ridiculous. Like,
I'm deep on that card, too.
I think that the foils right now, the median on TCG Player is $20. The median on a regular copy is $1.88. Online, these are 3 to 4 tickets all day, and they are propping up in two of the three most popular decks right now, being the red-green and the red-white variants. They are fantastic versus control. They are fantastic in the grindy sort of mid-range mirror matches that you're ending up with. Just the card advantage out of them. They're just a better Chandra in most of these decks. If they're not in the main deck, they're in the sideboard. This card is absurd, and anytime the moto price on a rare gets higher than the real life price, you really have to look at that card. And the fact that the foils have spiked up so much just means that that was probably the easiest thing for somebody to buy out, and that I expect the regular copies to follow soon. I expect these to be all of $5 at least.
It's so funny thinking back to the set.
No, don't do that.
No, because we're all kind of like, do we really want to pay 4 mana and a card for something that just does that? I'm not really sure. Like, we thought all the sieges would be good in a slower format like EDH, but a fast format like standard. But, like, in the context of the set, you know, having played with the cards, it actually really shines.
Well,
and
I also think that there is a tendency when there's cycles to just kind of judge them all together, even though that's not what you should do. So, like, we looked at the sieges and say, oh, that's kind of cool, but they're enchantments that don't impact the board the turn they come into play. Those have never been good, and it's just it's another cycle of do-nothing enchantments. You know, right. And I think, and Chandra's not being played. Like, Chandra's not played all that much, and it has the same effect as the Chandra, and apparently the fact that it is less, you know, it's less vulnerable than Chandra really does matter that much.
It's that you can play it while you're either in parity or behind and still be able to utilize it. Because Chandra, you don't really want to play. You don't want a -0 at the turn you play it most of the time.
Right.
You're not
exactly
getting any real value out of that. So this is actually doing the same thing, but setting you up for the turn later is much harder to kill and is actually easier to cast too, because a lot of these like red-green decks are just barely splashing red. So this just really gives you a little more access across the board if you're just splashing red.
I do see where we were wrong on it, you know. But, yeah. I mean, hey, we're catching it now.
I will say, if you listened to me last week, you would have picked them up for $1.
That's correct. Marcel was on it last week.
Marcel was 100% correct on that.
Did you regurgitate his old pick of the week?
No, I noticed the foil jump, and the foil jump really made me, like, look at the actual
price of it. Regurgitating his pick of the week?
Sure. While also making the same pick of the week as Marcel, yes.
All right, sure. A week later. That's what I asked. I asked in the message.
Extra planar lens is going to be worth a lot more money next week. I can't wait to call it again.
Jason is the asshole of this podcast, huh?
All right.
Yeah, Oh, no, he absolutely is.
I've got one here. I think this one is very good, and it's my first foray into tiny leader speculation. But no, I know, man, but it really is making it. I never see anybody play it. I've heard exactly one person in my LGS say they think it looks cool and they're thinking about putting together a deck, but the prices are moving. It's clearly being played. Order of White Clay is a rare from Lorwyn. It's under $1. I'm going to tell you what it does because I assume people don't know. It's one colorless, 2 white. It's not a legendary creature, but for one colorless and 2 white and untap, it's a 1/4, untap, you return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to play. It started to move up from, you know, like bulk, you know, sub 50 cents or whatever, to now it's just under $1. and we're seeing momentum. There's not a ton of stock out in the world. Foils of this have already been bought out, and I think that's a pretty good indicator that people certainly have some belief in it. So I really like – I obviously don't want to buy the foils at $90 or wherever they're at after they got bought out. But the non-foils at under a dollar, that sounds like a very difficult to lose scenario.
Now, do we think that tiny leaders is like a thing? Because I don't know where you guys – like where you guys are at, where I'm at, it's like the talk of the town. I mean every – LVR LGS is doing like an FNM or like a tiny leaders day, and like it's like an – like it's – they're definitely jumping on the bandwagon.
We know it's a thing, but we don't know to what extent it's going to affect prices.
In my LGS, like I said, we have a commander group of rotating. You know, we usually have like 6 to 8 on a given day, but of like 15 people, I've heard exactly one person in the past 3 weeks mention it.
Okay, and well, here's
so
here
you know
a big reasoning for
prices
that.
Are moving.
Corbin, do you have a big legacy crowd in your area?
No.
So what I've kind of noticed is that wherever there is a legacy crowd that perhaps is just kind of starved for legacy events, it seems to be where Tiny Leaders is really taking off. This might not be as much on the EDH crowd so much as it is the legacy crowd, because there's a lot of people who want to play legacy and want to play all these fun cards. And I mean, Tiny Leaders is kind of a way to still be able to do that in a fun, casual way and be able to maybe have a little bit wider player base because you do draw some of those EDH players.
That is a good point, because where I'm at is everybody loves legacy, so that's
Yeah, we have zero legacy crowd here, so I mean that's fair. To me, it's the sort of thing that it feels like an EDH variant still, you know, like because it is. So
right, but it's also
so
a legacy
I would
variant.
Right, so I don't know enough to say it is or isn't a thing, but I'm not so bullheaded enough that I'm going to ignore the market data. And the data has been pretty clear over the past month that
yeah, I've made some plays on some tiny leaders cards, specifically like some of the older foils and stuff. But I just look at the list that people put together and is Geist not the best one?
Oh, Geist is the consensus. Yeah.
I mean, is that not just like the Stone Cold Nuts? Like, why would anybody ever mess with anything else? You can
exactly
play the Stoneforge Mystic and all the swords. Like,
sort of a solved format to that, because it's like there's Geist at tier one and then everything else. So maybe more, but yeah, you're absolutely right about Geist. It's
like, why wouldn't you just play like Geist? Like, why would people want to play like Anafenza and like all those and like Alesha and all the cards that people are talking about when you can just be like, well, I can literally just play like.
Well, that's
like
EDH
Stoneblade.
Crowd. That's yeah, EDH yeah. crowd talking, right? The legacy crowd's talking about Stoneblade. The EDH crowd is trying to have fun with some other generals. So
and you know what? And that kind of thing, like Geist just stomping everybody out, may kind of dampen some of the enthusiasm.
Well,
for people that
it depends. Geist is much worse than a you know multiplayer format,
but it's
obviously insane in 1v1.
Tiny leaders is 1v1 though.
Well,
so Geist
until
get banned.
Your commander group decides that they want it to be. A four-player game, you know, like you said, it appeals to everybody in that sense. We're talking about the cross-pollination between those two groups. Your commander group may just want to use it as a commander variant and make it a four-player game.
Can they even do that though? Because the decks are 50 cards, so like whoever brings Mill to the table just wins, you know?
Well, I think EDH has some self-governing rules where you just don't play with that person anymore.
You win with fascination. That would be
fun. We have a guy at ours who likes to bring these stupid decks that play like Winter Orb crap like that. Half the time he locks himself out. We just stop playing with him. I'm real blunt with the guy. I'm like, if you come out with one of those decks again and you make another game, go 20 turns without doing anything, and you don't beat us, I'm never playing with you again.
Yeah.
EDH self-governs.
All right, so my pick of the week is going to be Clever Impersonator, because it's $1.33 online and $3 in paper. And I feel this card has a high upside. There's a lot that this can do, and maybe not till after rotation, but this card will definitely be worth a lot more than where it's currently at. So,
do you like it for standard, Marcel, or do you like it,
standard.
Okay.
Yeah, especially with the Ugins going around, like, you know, you could copy Ugins, you could copy big cards, Reanimator's still a strategy, you know, you copy Siege Rhinos, you can copy, you know, Hornet Queens, who knows what else is coming out, these dragons.
It's one of those cards that scales with better cards that come out, you know? So I think like long term, it's a great spec regardless of how it does in standard, because like anytime any new set comes up with some busted permanent, like it's always an answer, or it's always like, oh look, I get one too, you know.
And it's a mythic and an EDH staple.
An EDH.
It's pretty much at its floor for a playable mythic.
Exactly. What about the foil? The foil's $20 or six and a half times the multiplier.
Well, there's your EDH right there.
Right, but I mean, I wish it would go cheaper.
Yeah, I wanted to get one, but I'm not going to spend $20 on one. Yeah. Even though I probably should, because it'll be like $40 or $50 in a couple of years. Yeah.
I mean, maybe. It's still going to be open for a little while, I guess, another couple months.
Cons is still a hot seller for most of the vendors that I talk to. I can't actually sell sealed product because we don't have a store, but like most of the guys who do are a physical store rather. Most of the guys who do sell say that Cons is like still performing like insane.
I mean, it's got so much good stuff in it, and standard is good. I think that really means a lot.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, this is one of the better anytime there's more colors, standard just seems better.
Wow. Also, I mean, multicolor is more popular with the player base in general.
Also, nothing busted like Affinity or Academy.deck.
Yeah, it's harder to be like, oh, it's all format because this is the consensus best deck of the five decks they gave us. You can actually play your playstyle, your favorite colors.
Well, and that was the problem with like your lore when we talk about fairies is that everything was so linear. You had to play one of those five decks.
Well,
and Lorwyn tried to have
year.
A lot of colors, but it was just like, here, play five color good stuff. Cause we went too far the other way and made the mana way too good.
Well, literally last year we had two mono decks and an Esper deck. Like it was
really bad.
Last year was the worst in a long time. But I mean, before that was good, right?
I liked it a lot. I played Aristocrats a lot, and I love that deck. That's one of my favorite decks.
That was a good format, because you could legitimately play a lot there. The year before that was...
More Jund.
It was different flavors. It was like
Master Jund and...
Yeah, it was still like an okay format, though. Like, you still had like... You had like Ink Moth Primetime decks, didn't you? Wolf Run decks.
Yep.
But it was still fine.
I mean, it was all...
Better than Theros.
And it was all better than Cobblade.
Well, that's a matter of opinion, because other people say that Cobblade was the best standard was in a long time.
I mean, it was good in the sense that, like, if you wanted to take a deck and be really proficient with Cobblade, you could win PTQs by being a good player and outplaying
your
opponent.
The best player always won.
But that doesn't mean it was a diverse, but it doesn't mean it was a diverse metagame. That's what discussing, right?
From everything I've heard about Cobblade, I'm just glad I didn't play around that time. I quit after Shep Moore.
This is around the time when I actually played Magic competitively, and I went to an SCG Open the weekend that Twin came out. Or it wasn't an Open, it was like an Invitational the weekend Twin came out. And did very well with it against Cobblade. And Elves had a good Cobblade matchup. The problem was that, in that standard, in a Cobblade mirror, the better player would win almost every time. So, in that sense, it was good, and a lot of good players liked it. But the real problem was that, there was such a divide between Cobblade and then the Rug decks with like Lotus Cobra and stuff that you couldn't beat both, but Cobblade could beat Rug, you know? So like, so that's what limited, cause you could beat Cobblade with some decks and you could beat Rug with some decks, but it was very difficult to make decks that did both. Whereas you could play Cobblade and if you were a good player, you'd almost always win. So like, in a sense, it was good because of that, but as far as diversity goes, it was not.
I just don't really like the banhammer, especially in modern being swung so easily now. Like, you know, like I said, I've been playing for 20 years. So like, I remember when Academy came out. I remember when like, original Affinity came out. I remember when Fairies came out, and those were like very, very oppressive archetypes comparatively. And you know, like 46 or 50% of the format is one deck. You know, obviously you have a problem. And like, I really didn't, from a financial perspective, I was fine with the bannings, but like, The pod banning, although when you look at the numbers, it won 5 out of 12 GPs. Okay, I guess that kind of makes sense, but like, I just wish they would give these eternal formats, like modern especially, more time to flesh out, because there's just so much more out there, because there's such a much bigger card pile than in standard. So it's just, you know, all these bannings all the time.
So Kyle, let me ask you this. Did you think that there should be a modern Pro Tour this year?
You know, there's a lot of talk about that, and I feel that I side with the rank and file players more than with the pros, because it generates hype. I just wish that Wizards would like cool it with the banhammer.
But like those two things, in a sense, are mutually exclusive. Because the pros who are actually playing in the Pro Tour and who Wizards obviously has an interest in keeping, they want an edge. It's not good for anybody if every pro shows up to the Pro Tour playing Blue Red Delver. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So like, they have to swing, and if they ban Blue, if they only ban the Delve cards, every player shows up with Pod. You have to swing the Banhammer, or that modern Pro Tour that only exists because the community demanded it would have been terrible.
I don't know if that's the case, because GP New Jersey wasn't super terrible.
But like, it's
like
a GP. It's not a GP.
Yeah,
it's not. It's not the 200 best players in the world. It's a GP where anybody shows up. That's the difference. Like, there is zero chance that anybody would show up playing anything but Pod, Delver, or Affinity at that Pro Tour if the Banhammer did not swing.
But to be fair, didn't something like 46% of the field show up with Abzan? Or was like 36%? Although they were different flavors.
They were different flavors. I mean, and that wasn't great either, right? But like, Wizards didn't want the Pro Tour in the first place, you know?
I just
like,
think that there's so many combinations out there. They should just – it's an eternal format. There's like way more cards than just six sets, you know? There's something like 40-something – no, probably not that high. Like 30-something sets that you can choose cards from in Modern. Like,
well, right.
They should have
great
more
on a Grand Prix level, because you'll see this slower evolution. But when you get the 200 best players in the world to figure out this format, it's going to get solved real fast no matter how many cards are in the pool.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, I mean, like, if it only exists on a Grand Prix level, then that works and that slow evolution gets there. But the Pro Tour puts so much pressure on the format that it's difficult. So,
right. Yeah, that's
like I said, you have to see both sides.
Okay. So, we heard a debate. Hey, we got some tournament stuff going on. But we're going to have to end this cast. We're coming to the end.
Last episode ever.
Last episode on the planet.
Man,
so Kyle,
every episode.
What's up?
How can people find you out there?
I am on Twitter. It's your boy Lope, L-O-P-E. I'm on Facebook at Aether Games. My TCG store, well, my online store is Aether Games on TCG Player. You can reach me by email at kyle@aemtg.com, or you can order directly from us at www.aemtg.com.
And what about you other hooligans?
I can be found on Twitter at Cripple Command, CRYPPLE Command. I can be found on Facebook, but I don't really add people. Feel free to follow me. I do make public posts. And then I can be found on Gathering Magic, my articles, and on Brainstorm Brewery every week.
And who are you?
I am Ryan.
Don't know you.
Ryan
Bouchard.
Bouchard. Yeah, no one will ever be able to spell it anyway. So, yeah, Bouchard. Sure, we'll go with that.
Next up, we have
Corbin. I'm Corbin Hostler. It's chostler88 on Twitter and Reddit, that sort of thing. I write for inpeople.com. I write for Quiet Speculation. There's this Brainstorm Brewery thing we do on our website and on Gathering Magic every Friday. You can find me anywhere. I'll accept anybody. I'll be friends with whoever. So if you are interested, that's how you find me.
Well, last, definitely least, Mr. Sourpuss.
You can find me online at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery.
good one.
I like that.
And check me out, MarcelMTG on Twitter, and you'll check us out next week. You can find us on Gathering Magic and brainstormbrewery.com. We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.